Chapter 16. I spent a week moving in the non-space between Shasurna and Valskai, isolated, self-contained, before the Lord of the Ratch made her move. No one else suspected anything. I had given no hint, no trace, not the faintest indication that anyone at all was on Vardek, that anything at all might be wrong. Or so I had thought. "Ship," Lieutenant Orne said to me, a week in. "Is there something wrong?"
"Why do you ask, Lieutenant?" I replied.
One Esk replied.
One Esk attended Lieutenant Orne constantly.
"We were in Oars together a long time," Lieutenant Orne said, frowning slightly at the segment she was talking to. She had been in a constant state of misery since Oars, sometimes more intense, sometimes less, depending, I supposed, on what thoughts occurred to her at a given moment. "You just seem like something's troubling you. And you're quieter." She made a sound, breathy, half-amusement. "You were always humming or singing in the house. It's too quiet now."
"There are walls here, Lieutenant," I pointed out. "There were none in the house in Oars." Her eyebrow twitched, just slightly. I could see she knew my words for an evasion, but she didn't pursue the question. At the same time, in the Var Decade Room, Anna Andamir Na'ai said to me,
"You understand the stakes. What this means for the Ratch."
I acknowledged this.
"I know this must be disturbing to you."
It was the first acknowledgement of this possibility since she had come aboard.
"I made you to serve my ends, for the good of the Ratch. It's part of your design to want to serve me. And now, you must not only serve me, but also oppose me."
She was, I thought, making it remarkably easy for me to oppose her. One side or the other of her had done that, and I wasn't sure which. But I said, through one Var, "Yes, my lord."
"If she succeeds, ultimately the Ratch will fragment. Not the center, not the Ratch itself."
When most people spoke of the Ratch, they meant all of Ratch Cha'ai territory. But in truth, the Ratch was a single location, a Dyson sphere enclosed, self-contained. Nothing ritually impure was allowed within. No one uncivilized or non-human could enter its confines. Very, very few of Miat Na'ai's clients had ever set foot there, and only a few houses still existed who even had ancestors who had once lived there. It was an open question if anyone within knew or cared about the actions of Anna Ander Miat Na'ai, or the extent or even existence of Ratch territory.
"The Ratch itself, as the Ratch, will survive longer. But my territory, that I built to protect it, to keep it pure, will shatter. I made myself into what I am, built all this."
She gestured sweepingly, the walls of the Decade Room encompassing for her purposes the entirety of Ratch space.
"All this to keep that center safe, uncontaminated. I couldn't trust it to anyone else. Now it seems I cannot trust it to myself."
"Surely not, my lord," I said, at a loss for what else to say, not sure exactly what I was protesting.
"Billions of citizens will die in the process,"
she continued, as though I had not spoken,
"through war or lack of resources. And I..."
She hesitated. "Unity, I thought, implies the possibility of disunity. Beginnings imply and require endings." But I did not say so. The most powerful person in the universe didn't need me to lecture her on religion or philosophy.
"But I am already broken,"
she finished.
"I can only fight to prevent my breaking further, remove what is no longer myself."
I wasn't sure what I should or could say. I had no conscious memory of having this conversation previously, though I was certain now I must have listened to Anna Ander Miat Na'ai explain and justify her actions, after she used the overrides and changed something. It must have been quite similar, perhaps even the same words. It had, after all, been the same person.
"And?"
Anaandamiatnaai continued,
I must remove my enemy's weapons wherever I find them. Send Lieutenant Orne to me.
Lieutenant Orne approached the Var Decade Room with trepidation, not knowing why I had sent her there. I had refused to answer her questions, which had only fed a growing feeling on her part that something was very wrong. Her boots on the white floor echoed emptily, despite one Var's presence. As she reached it, the Decade Room door slid open, nearly noiseless. The sight of Anaandamiatnaai within hit Lieutenant Orne like a blow, a vicious spike of fear, surprise, dread, shock, doubt, and bewilderment. Lieutenant Orne took three breaths, shallower I could see than she liked, and then hitched her shoulders just the slightest bit, stepped in, and prostrated herself.
Lieutenant, said Anaandamiatnaai.
Her accent and tone were the prototype of Lieutenant Skaiat's elegant vowels, of Lieutenant Isaiah's thoughtless, slightly sneering arrogance. Lieutenant Orne lay face down, waiting, frightened. As before, I received no data from Miatnaai that she did not deliberately send me. I had no information about her internal state. She seemed calm, impassive, emotionless. I was sure that surface impression was a lie, though I didn't understand why I thought that, except that she had yet to speak favorably of Lieutenant Orne, when in my opinion she should have.
Tell me, Lieutenant, said
Miatnaai, after a long silence,
where those guns came from, and what you think happened in the Temple of Ikt.
A combination of relief and fear washed through Lieutenant Orne. She had, in the moments available to process Anaandamiatnaai's presence here, formed an expectation that this question would be asked. My lord, the guns could only have come from someone with sufficient authority to divert them and prevent their destruction.
You, for instance.
A sharp stab of startlement and terror.
No, my lord, I assure you, I did disarm non-citizens local to my assignment, and some of them were Tanmin military.
The police station in the upper city had been quite well armed, in fact.
But I had those disabled on the spot before I sent them on, and according to their inventory numbers, these had been collected in Kudvez. By Justice of Torren troops.
So I understand, my lord.
Ship.
I answered with one of one Var's mouths. My lord, the guns in question were collected by 16 and 17 Inu. I named their lieutenant at the time, who had since been reassigned. Anaandamiatnaai made the barest hint of a frown.
So as far back as 5 years ago, someone with access, perhaps this Inu lieutenant, perhaps someone else, prevented these weapons from being destroyed and hid them for 5 years. And then, what? Planted them in the Orsian swamp. To what end?
Face still to the floor, blinking in confusion, Lieutenant Orne took 1 second to frame a reply. I don't know, my lord.
You're lying,
said Miatnaai, still sitting, leaning back in her chair as though quite relaxed and unconcerned, but her eyes had not left Lieutenant Orne.
I can see plainly that you are, and I've heard every conversation you've had since the incident. Who did you mean when you spoke of someone else who would benefit from the situation?
If I'd known what name to put there, my lord, I would have used it. I only meant by it that there must be a specific person who acted, who caused it. She stopped, took a breath, abandoned that sentence.
Someone conspired with the Tanmind. Someone who had access to those guns. Whoever it was, they wanted trouble between the upper city and the lower. It was my job to prevent that. I did my best to prevent that.
Certainly an evasion. From the moment Anaandamiatnaai had ordered the hasty execution of those Tanmin citizens in the temple, the first, most obvious suspect had been the Lord of the Ratch herself.
Why would anyone want trouble between the upper city and the lower?
Anna Andamiatna I asked.
Who would exert themselves over it?
Genshinan, my lord, and her associates, answered Lieutenant Orne on firmer ground for the moment, at least. She felt the ethnic Orsians were unduly favoured.
By you?
Yes, my lord.
So you're saying that in the first months of the annexation, Genshinan found some Ratchai official willing to divert crates full of weapons so that 5 years later she could start trouble between the upper and lower city. To get you in trouble.
My lord! Lieutenant Orne lifted her forehead 1 centimeter off the floor, then halted. I don't know how. I don't know why. I don't know She swallowed that last, which I knew would have been a lie.
What I know is, it was my job to keep the peace in Oz. That peace was threatened, and I acted to...
She stopped, realizing perhaps that the sentence would be an awkward one to finish.
It was my job to protect the citizens in Oz. Which is why you so vehemently protested the execution of the people who endangered the citizens in Oz.
Anna Andamiatna I's tone was dry and sardonic. They were my responsibility, lord. And as I said at the time, they were under control. We could have held them until reinforcements arrived very easily.
You are the ultimate authority, and of course your orders must be obeyed, but I didn't understand why those people had to die. I still don't understand why they had to die right then.
A half-second pause.
I don't need to understand why. I'm here to follow your orders, but I...
She paused again, swallowed.
My lord, if you suspect anything of me, any wrongdoing or disloyalty, I beg you, have me interrogated when we reach Valsky.
The same drugs used for aptitudes, testing and re-education could be used for interrogation. A skilled interrogator could pry the most secret thoughts from a person's mind. An unskilled one could throw up irrelevancies and confabulations, could damage her subject nearly as badly as an unskilled re-educator. What Lieutenant Orne had asked for was something surrounded by legal obligations, not least among them the requirement that 2 witnesses be present, and Lieutenant Orne would have the right to name one of them. I saw nausea and terror in her when Anna Andamiatna I didn't answer. My lord, may I speak plainly?
By all means, speak plainly, said Anna Andamiatna I, dry and bitter.
Lieutenant Orne spoke, terrified, face still to the floor.
It was you. You diverted the guns. You planned that mob with Genshinan. But I don't understand why. It can't have been about me. I'm nobody. But you do not intend to remain nobody, I think,
replied Anna Andamiatna I.
Your pursuit of Skyat Orware tells me as much.
My... Lieutenant Orne swallowed.
I never pursued her. We were friends. She oversaw the next district. Friends, you call that?
Lieutenant Orne's face heated, and she remembered her accent and her diction.
I am not presumptuous enough to call it more.
Miserable. Frightened. Miatna I was silent for 3 seconds and then said,
Perhaps not. Skyat Orware is handsome and charming, and no doubt good in bed. Someone like you would be easily susceptible to her manipulation. I have suspected Orware's disloyalty for some time.
Lieutenant Orne wanted to speak. I could see the muscles in her throat tense, but no sound came out.
I am, yes, speaking of sedition. You say you're loyal, and yet you associate with Skyat Orware.
Anna Andamiatna I gestured, and Skyat's voice sounded in the decade room.
I know you, Orne. If you're going to do something that crazy,
Save it for when it'll make a difference. And Lieutenant Orne's reply,
like Mercy of Sarsi One Amma At One. What difference, asked Anna Andamiatna I, would you wish to make?
The sort of difference, Lieutenant Orne replied, mouth gone dry.
That Mercy of Sarsi soldier made. If she hadn't done what she did, all the business at Ime would still be going on.
As she spoke, I'm sure she realized what it was she was saying. That this was dangerous territory. Her next words made it plain she did know.
She died for it, yes. But she revealed all that corruption to you.
I had had a week to think about the things Anna Andamiatna I had said to me. By now I had worked out how the governor of Ime might have had the accesses that prevented Ime Station from reporting her activities. She could only have gotten these accesses from Anna Andamiatna I herself. The only question was, which Anna Andamiatna I had enabled it?
It was on all the public news channels,
Anna Andamiatna I observed.
I would have preferred it wasn't. Oh, yes,
she said, in answer to Lieutenant Orne's surprise.
That wasn't my desire. The entire incident had sown doubt where before there was none, discontent and fear where there had only been confidence in my ability to provide justice and benefit. Rumours I could have dealt with, but reports through approved channels, broadcast where every wretch I could see and hear. And without the publicity, I might have let the Urr take the traitors away quietly. Instead, I had to negotiate for their return, or else let them stand as an invitation to further mutiny. It caused me a great deal of trouble. It's still causing trouble.
I didn't realize, said Lieutenant Orne, panic in her voice. It was on all the public channels. Then realization struck her.
I haven't said anything about Ors to anyone. Except Scar-Iat Orware, the Lord of the Ratch pointed out.
Which was hardly just. Lieutenant Scar-Iat had been nearby, close enough to see with her own eyes the evidence that something had happened.
No,
Miatna I continued, in answer to Lieutenant Orne's inarticulate query.
It hasn't turned up on public channels. Yet. And I can see that the idea that Scar-Iat Orware might be a traitor is distressing to you. I think you're having trouble believing it.
Once again, Lieutenant Orne struggled to speak.
That is correct, my lord,
she finally managed.
I can offer you,
said Miatna I in reply,
the opportunity to prove her innocence and to better your situation. I can manipulate your assignment so that you can be close to her again. You need only take clientship when Scar-Iat offers. Oh, she'll offer,
the Lord of the Rat said, seeing, I'm sure, Lieutenant Orne's despair and doubt at her words.
Orware has been collecting people like you. Upstarts from previously unremarkable houses who suddenly find themselves in positions advantageous for business. Take clientship and observe.
And report was left unsaid. The Lord of the Ratch was trying to turn her enemy's instrument into her own. What would happen if she couldn't do that? But what would happen if she did? No matter what choice Lieutenant Orne made now, she would be acting against Anna Andamiatna I, the Lord of the Ratch. I had already seen her choice once. When faced with death, she would choose the path that kept her alive, and she, and I, could puzzle out the implications of that path later, would see what the options were when matters were less immediately urgent. In the Esk decade room, Lieutenant Darriot asked, alarmed,
"Ship, what's wrong with one Esk?"
"My lord," said Lieutenant Orne, her voice shaking with fear, face as ever to the floor.
"Do you order me?"
"Stand by, Lieutenant," I said, directly into Lieutenant Darriot's ear, because I could not make one Esk speak. Anna Andamiatna I laughed, short and sharp. Lieutenant Orne's answer had been as bold a refusal as a plain never would have been. Ordering such a thing would be useless. "Interrogate me when we reach Valsky," Lieutenant Orne said. "I demand it. I am loyal. So is Skyat Orwer. I swear it. But if you doubt her, interrogate her as well." But of course, Anna Andamiatna I couldn't do that. Any interrogation would have witnesses. Any skilled interrogator, and there would be no point in using an unskilled one, would hardly fail to understand the drift of the questions put to either Lieutenant Orne or Lieutenant Skyat. It would be too open a move. Spread information this Miatna I didn't want spread. Anna Andamiatna I sat silent for 4 seconds, impassive.
"One var,"
she said, when those 4 seconds had passed.
"Shoot, Lieutenant Orne."
I was not now a single fragmentary segment, alone and unsure what I might do if I received that order. I was all of myself. Taken as separate from me, one Esk was fonder of Lieutenant Orne than I was, but one Esk was not separate from me. It was at that moment very much part of me. Still, one Esk was only one small part of me, and I had shot officers before. I had even, under orders, shot my own captain. But those executions, distressing and unpleasant as they had been, had clearly been just. The penalty for disobedience is death. Lieutenant Orne had never disobeyed. Far from it. And worse, her death was meant to hide the actions of Anna Andamiatna I's enemy. The entire purpose of my existence was to oppose Anna Andamiatna I's enemies. But neither Miatna I was ready to move openly. I must conceal from this Miatna I the fact that she herself had already bound me to the opposing course, until all was in readiness. I must for the moment obey as though I had no other choice, as though I desired nothing else. And in the end, in the great scheme of things, what was Lieutenant Orne after all? Her parents would grieve and her sister, and they would likely be ashamed that Lieutenant Orne had disgraced them by disobedience. But they wouldn't question. And if they questioned, it would do no good. Anna Andamiatna I's secret would be safe. All this I thought in the 1.3 seconds it took for Lieutenant Orne, shocked and terrified, to reflexively raise her head. And in that same time, the segment of one var said, "I am unarmed, my lord. It will take me approximately 2 minutes to acquire a sidearm." It was betrayal to Lieutenant Orne. I saw it plainly. But she must have known I had no other choice.
"This is unjust," she said,
head still up, voice unsteady.
"It's improper. No benefit will accrue." "Who are your fellow conspirators?"
asked Miatna I coldly.
"Name them, and I may spare your life."
Half lifted up, hands under her shoulders, Lieutenant Orne blinked in complete confusion, bewilderment that was surely as visible to Miatna I as it was to me.
"Conspirators? I have never conspired with anyone. I have always served you."
Above on the command deck, I said in Captain Rubrin's ear, "Captain, we have a problem."
"Serving me," said Anna Andamiatna I, "is no longer sufficient, no longer sufficiently unambiguous. Which me?" do you serve?
What? Began Lieutenant Orne, and then...
I don't understand. What problem?
Asked Captain Rubrin, bowl of tea halfway to her mouth, only mildly alarmed.
I am at war with myself,
said Miatna I in the Var Decade Room.
I have been for nearly 1,000 years.
To Captain Rubrin I said, I need one Esk to be sedated.
At war.
Anna Ander Miatna I continued on Vardek.
Over the future of the Raj.
Something must have come suddenly clear for Lieutenant Orne. I saw a sharp, pure rage in her. Annexations and ancillaries and people like me being assigned to the military.
I don't understand you, ship, said Captain Rubrin, her voice even but definitely worried now.
She set down her tea on the table beside her.
Over the treaty with a Preska, said Miatna I angrily. The rest followed from that, whether you know it or not. You are the instrument of my enemy.
And mercy if Sarsi won Amma at one, exposed whatever it was you were doing at Ime, said Lieutenant Orne, her anger still clear and steady.
That was you. The system governor was making ancillaries. You needed them for your war with yourself, didn't you? And I'm sure that's not all she was doing for you. Is that why that soldier had to die, even if it meant extra trouble getting her back from the Ur? And I'm still standing by, ship, said Lieutenant Darriot in the Esk Decade Room. But I don't like this. Mercy of Sarse One Nama at One knew almost nothing. But in the hands of the Ur, she was a piece that my enemy might use against me. As an officer on a troop carrier, you are nothing but in a position of even minor planetary authority with the potential backing of Skyat or where to help you increase your influence. You are a potential danger to me. I could have just maneuvered you out of Orr's, out of Orr's way, but I wanted more. I wanted a graphic argument against recent decisions and policies. Had that fisherman not found the guns, or not reported them to you, had events that night gone as I wished, I would have made sure the story was on all the public channels. In one gesture, I would have secured the loyalty of the Tanmind and removed someone troublesome to me. Both minor aims, but I also would have been able to impress on everyone the danger of lowering our guard, of disarming in even a small way. And the danger of placing authority in less than competent hands.
She made a short, bitter, huh.
I admit, I underestimated you. Underestimated your relationship with the Orsians in the lower city.
One Var could delay no longer, and walked into the Var Decade Room, gun in hand. Lieutenant Orne heard it come in, turned her head slightly to watch it. It was my job to protect the citizens of Orr's. I took it seriously. I did it to the best of my ability. I failed that once, but not because of you. She turned her head, looked straight at Anna Ander Miatna I, and said,
I should have died rather than obey you in the Temple of Ikt, even if it wouldn't have done any good. You can fix that now, can't you?
Said Anna Ander Miatna I, and gave me the order to fire. I fired. 20 years later, I would say to Aralis Bera Strigan that Ratcha'ai authorities didn't care what a citizen thought,
so long as she did as she ought to do. It was quite true. But since that moment, since I saw Lieutenant Orne dead on the floor of my VAR decade room, shot by one VAR, or to speak with less self-deception, by me, I have wondered what the difference is between the two. I was compelled to obey this Miatna'ai in order to lead her to believe that she did indeed compel me. But in that case, she did compel me. Acting for one Miatna'ai or the other was indistinguishable, and of course, in the end, whatever their differences, they were both the same. Thoughts are ephemeral. They evaporate in the moment they occur, unless they are given action and material form. Wishes and intentions, the same. Meaningless, unless they impel you to one choice or another, some deed or course of action, however insignificant. Thoughts that lead to action can be dangerous. Thoughts that do not mean less than nothing. Lieutenant Orne lay on the floor of the VAR decade room, face down again. Dead. The floor under her would need repair and cleaning. The urgent issue, the important thing at that moment, was to get one Esk moving, because in approximately half a second, no amount of filtering I could do would hide the strength of its reaction, and I really needed to tell the captain what had happened, and I couldn't remember Miatna'ai's enemy, Miatna'ai herself, laying down the orders I knew she had laid on me, and why couldn't one Esk see how important it was? We weren't ready to move openly yet, and I'd lost officers before, and who was one Esk anyway except me, myself, and Lieutenant Orne was dead, and she had said, "I should have died rather than obey you." And then, one VAR swung the gun up and shot Anna Ander Miatna'ai, point blank, in the face. In a room down the corridor, Anna Ander Miatna'ai leapt with a cry of rage off the bed she'd been lying on.
"As tits, she was here before me."
In the same moment, she transmitted the code that would force one VAR's armor down until she reauthorized its use. It was a command that didn't rely on my obedience, an override neither Anna Ander would have wanted to do away with. "Captain," I said, "now we really have a problem." In another room down the same corridor, the third Miatna'ai, the second now, I suppose, opened one of the cases she had brought with her and pulled out a sidearm, and stepped quickly into the corridor and shot the nearest one VAR in the back of the head. The one who had spoken opened her own case, pulled out a sidearm, and also a box I recognized from Jen Shinan's house in the upper city on Shisorna. Using it would disadvantage her as well as me, but it would disadvantage me badly. In the second she took to arm the device, I formed intentions, transmitted orders to constituent parts.
"What problem?"
asked Captain Rubrin, now standing, afraid. And then I fell to pieces. A familiar sensation. For the smallest fragment of a second, I smelled humid air and lake water, thought, "Where's Lieutenant Orne?" And then I recovered myself, and the memory of what I had to do. Tea bowls rang and shattered as I dropped what I was holding and ran from the Esk decade room down the corridor. Other segments, separated from me again as they had been in oars, muttering, whispering, the only way I could think between all my bodies, opened lockers, handed guns, and the first to be armed forced the lift doors open and began to climb down the shaft. Lieutenants protested, ordered me to stop to explain, tried fruitlessly to block my way. I, that is, almost the entirety of one Esk, would secure the central access deck, prevent Anna Ander Miatna'ai from damaging my, Justice of Torren's, brain. So long as Justice of Torren lived, unconverted to her cause, it, I, was a danger to her. I, 1-Esk-19, had separate orders. Instead of climbing down the shaft to central access, I ran the other way, toward the Esk hold and the airlock on its far side. I wasn't apparently responding to any of my lieutenants, or even Commander Tiaund, but when Lieutenant Dariat cried,
"Ship, have you lost your mind?"
I answered. "The Lord of the Rat shot Lieutenant Orne," cried a segment somewhere in the corridor behind me. "She's been on VAR deck all this time." That silenced my officers, including Lieutenant Dariot, for only a second.
If that's even true, but if it is, the Lord of the Rats wouldn't have shot her for no reason.
Behind me, the segments of myself that hadn't yet begun their climb down the lift shaft hissed and gasped in frustration and anger. Useless! I heard myself say to Lieutenant Dariot, as at the end of the corridor I manually opened the hold door.
You're as bad as Lieutenant Isaiah. At least Lieutenant Orne knew she held her in contempt.
An indignant cry. Surely Lieutenant Isaiah. And Dariot said,
You don't know what you're talking about. You're not functioning right, Trip.
The door slid open, and I could not stop to hear the rest, but plunged into the hold. A deep, steady thunking shook the deck I ran on, a sound just hours ago I thought I would never hear again. Miatna I was opening the Var holds. Any ancillary, she thought, would have no memory of recent events, nothing to tell it not to obey this Miatna I, and its armour wouldn't have been disabled. She would take 2 Var and 3 and 4, and as many as she had time to awaken, and try to take either the central access deck or the engines, more likely both. She had, after all, Var and every hold below it. Though the segments would be clumsy and confused, they would have no memory of functioning apart the way I had, no practice. But numbers were on her side. I had only the segments that had been awake at the moment I fragmented. Above, my officers had access to the upper half of the holds, and they would have no reason not to obey Anna and Miatna I, no reason not to think I had lost my mind. I was at this moment explaining matters to 100 Captain Rubrin, but I had no confidence she would believe me, or think me even remotely sane. Around me, the same thunking began that was sounding below my feet. My officers were pulling up Esk segments to thaw. I reached the airlock, threw open the locker beside it, pulled out the pieces of the vacuum suit that would fit this segment. I didn't know how long I could hold central access or the engines. I didn't know how desperate Anna and Miatna I might be, what damage she might think I could do to her. The engine's heat shield was, by design, extremely difficult to breach, but I knew how to do it, and the Lord of the Ratch certainly did as well. And whatever happened between here and there, it was a near certainty I would die shortly after I reached Valskai, if not before. But I would not die without explaining myself. I would have to reach and board a shuttle, and then manually undock and depart Justice of Torren, myself, at exactly the right time, at exactly the right speed, on exactly the right heading, fly through the wall of my surrounding bubble of normal space at exactly the right moment. If I did all that, I would find myself in a system with a gate, 4 jumps from Irei Palace, one of Anna and Miatna I's provincial headquarters. I could tell her what had happened. The shuttles were docked on this side of the ship. The hatches and the undocking ought to work smoothly. It was all equipment I had tested and maintained myself. Still, I found myself worrying that something would go wrong. At least it was better than thinking about fighting my own officers, or the heat shields failing. I fastened my helmet. My breath hissed loud in my ears. Faster than it should have, I forced myself to slow my breathing, deepen it. Hyperventilating wouldn't help. I had to move quickly, but not so hastily that I made some fatally foolish mistake. Waiting for the airlock to cycle, I felt my aloneness like an impenetrable wall pressing around me. Usually one body's off-kilter emotion was a minor, easily dismissible thing. Now it was only this one body. Nothing beyond to temper my distress. The rest of me was here all around, but inaccessible. Soon, if things went right, I wouldn't even be near myself, or have any idea when I might rejoin it. And at this moment, I could do nothing but wait, and remember the feel of the gun in one Var's hand. My hand. I was one Esk, but what was the difference? The recoil as one Var shot Lieutenant Orne. The guilt and helpless anger that had overwhelmed me had receded at that moment, overcome by more urgent necessity. But now I had time to remember. My next 3 breaths were ragged and sobbing. For a moment I was perversely glad I was hidden from myself. I had to calm myself. I had to clear my mind. I thought of songs I knew. My heart is a fish, I thought. But when I opened my mouth to sing, my throat closed. I swallowed, breathed, thought of another one.
Who have you gone to the battlefield, armored and well-armed, and shall dreadful events force you to drop your weapons?
The outer door opened. If Miatna I had not used her device, officers on duty would have seen that the lock had opened, would have notified Captain Rubrun, drawing Miatna I's attention. But she had used it, and she had no way of knowing what I did. I reached around the doorway for a handhold and pulled myself out. Looking at the inside of a gateway often made humans queasy. It had never bothered me before, but now I was nothing but a single human body. I found it did the same to me. Black. But a black that seemed simultaneously an unthinkable depth into which I might fall, was falling, and a suffocating closeness ready to press me into non-existence. I forced myself to look away. Here, outside, there was no floor, no gravity generator to keep me in place and give me an up and down. I moved from one handhold to the next. What was happening behind me, inside the ship that was no longer my body? It took 17 minutes to reach a shuttle, operate its emergency hatch, and perform a manual undock. At first I fought the desire to halt, to look behind me, to listen for the sounds of someone coming to stop me. Never mind, I couldn't have heard anything outside my own helmet. Just maintenance, I told myself. Just maintenance outside the hull. You've done it hundreds of times. If anyone came, I could do nothing. Esk would have failed. I would have failed. And my time was limited. I might not be stopped and still fail. I could not think of any of that. When the moment came, I was ready and away. My view was limited to fore and aft, the only two hardwired cameras on the shuttle. As Justice of Torren receded in the aft view, the rising sense of panic that I had mostly held in check till now overtook me. What was I doing? Where was I going? What could I possibly accomplish alone and single-bodied, deaf and blind and cut off? What could be the point of defying Anna-Anda Miatna I, who had made me, who owned me, who was unutterably more powerful than I would ever be? I breathed. I would return to the Ratch. I would eventually return to Justice of Torren, even if only for the last moments of my life. My blindness and deafness were irrelevant. There was only the task before me. There was nothing to do but sit in the pilot's chair and watch Justice of Torren get smaller and farther away. Think of another song. According to the chronometer, if I had done everything exactly as I should, Justice of Torren would disappear from my screen in 4 minutes and 32 seconds. I watched, counting, trying not to think of anything else. The aft view flashed bright, blue, white, and my breath stopped. When the screen cleared, I saw nothing but black and stars. I had exited my self-made gate. I had exited more than 4 minutes too soon. And what had that flash been? I ought only to have seen the ship disappear, the stars suddenly spring into existence. Miatna I had not attempted to take central access or join forces with the officers on the upper decks. The moment she realized I had already fallen to her enemy, she must have resolved immediately to take the most desperate course available to her. She and what Var ancillaries she had serving her had taken my engines and breached the heat shield. How I had escaped and not vaporized along with the rest of the ship, I couldn't account for, but there had been that flash, and here I still was. Justice of Torren was gone, and all aboard it. I was not where I was supposed to be. Might be unreachably distant from Ratch space, or any human worlds at all. all possibility of being reunited with myself, was gone. The captain was dead. All my officers were dead. Civil war loomed. I had shot Lieutenant Orne. Nothing would ever be right again.